The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. I'm just back from having taught a two-week retreat at IRC, and I'm still really in that space. So it's delightful to be here and to see you all. Today, kind of in some ways, one of the themes that I felt would be useful from the retreat to carry into today is to speak a little bit about how our minds kind of are involved in a process of conditions that often lead us to reactivity. And what is the kind of fundamental piece of that reactivity, essentially? The teachings of the Buddha offer a kind of a very clear description, essentially, of how reactivity comes to be in our minds. By reactivity, that includes what we would call, our reactive emotions, and maybe even a few more than what we would call our reactive emotions. So things like anger, frustration, impatience, even things like confusion or boredom or pride. Oh, dear. Sorry about that. Even things like pride or arrogance or excitement, anxiety, depression, all of these are essentially, the Buddha described a kind of conditioned process by which these happen in our minds. And fortunately, in exploring and understanding that conditioned process, the Buddha recognized in his own mind, I kind of almost think of the Buddha as a very devoted scientist of his own mind, and in exploring his own mind, recognizing that what he was seeing was not just about his own experience, but was related to human experience. And so he, in his own observation of his own mind, recognized, oh, this is not only going on here, this is going on everywhere. And no wonder there's so much suffering in the world, because this pattern of reactivity is not clean and seen and clearly understood. And so he offered us a teaching around this from his own experience and said, look for yourself, see what's happening in your own mind. And so this teaching is kind of a description of how our usual habitual reactive habits, patterns come to be. And it one of the places to begin exploring this is with a very simple aspect of our experience, and that is what is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. This aspect of experience is part of every single moment of experience, and yet it's often something we overlook because our habitual tendency is to immediately kind of respond or react to pleasant, unpleasant experience in particular, neutral experience we often overlook, space out about, or get bored, confused. And so we overlook or we react to the pleasant and unpleasant in a very habitual way. When something's pleasant, we tend to like it. We want it. We want to move towards it. When something's unpleasant, we don't like it. We want to get rid of it. We want to stop it, fix it, change it. If we can't stop, fix, change our unpleasant experience, or if we can't get what we want in terms of pleasant experience, often experiences such as impatience, frustration, anger, hatred, confusion are born. And the Buddha pointed to this process, basically that essentially the leaping point of our reactivity comes when we don't recognize clearly, oh, this is unpleasant experience, or this is pleasant experience. This kind of habit we have to move from pleasant to liking, to wanting, to trying to hold on to being frustrated if we can't get what we want, unpleasant, not liking, not wanting, wanting to get rid of, push away, fear, anger, confusion, hatred. Very habitual process in our minds. And in some ways, kind of based in just our human experience of, you know, this is what we do when we come out of the womb. We gravitate towards pleasant. We cry when it's unpleasant. An adult comes to our aid, and we maybe have our unpleasantness removed. And so we learn, essentially, that getting pleasant and getting rid of unpleasant feels good. And it does feel good. And in fact, the Buddha did point to that kind of process of getting pleasant, getting rid of unpleasant, as being a kind of happiness. It's a form of happiness in our human lives. And yet, the way we've learned, and actually this mechanism of moving towards pleasant, away from unpleasant, it's all throughout life, essentially. Any organism, any living organism will gravitate towards what it nourishes it and away from what doesn't nourish it. So roots of trees grow towards the water, and it, you know, just in a very natural process. Single-celled organisms move towards food and away from noxious chemicals. So it's kind of embedded in life that there's this tendency to move towards pleasant, away from unpleasant. And yet in our human system, this movement towards pleasant, away from unpleasant, has kind of run amok. And one of the great fortunes, actually, of being a human being is that the process by which our minds look at pleasant and decide to move towards it, or look at unpleasant, meet unpleasant and decide to move away from it, it's not a hardwired process as it is in trees or in single-celled organisms. That's just the nature of those organisms. In our system, there's a little bit more possibility. I mean, we have an agency in our system, and there's choice that can be made about how to move towards well-being in our lives. But from the time we're born, pretty much the only way we've learned to find well-being is to get pleasant and get rid of unpleasant. And so this becomes our mode of finding happiness. If I can get what I want, construct a world where I can both have pleasant experience and not have unpleasant experience, almost like we're stringing beads on a chain. It's like, oh, pleasant experience, no unpleasant experience, no unpleasant, pleasant experience, pleasant. If we could do that, we would think that would be the ultimate happiness. That's kind of the best, we think the best it can get. And what the Buddha discovered in his own exploration was that is kind of the least form of happiness available to us as human beings, the getting something we want, the getting rid of something we don't want. And that as we begin to explore our own minds and recognize, first of all, that that habit of getting what we want, getting rid of what we don't want, basically that habit conditions greed and aversion, the wanting and the not wanting. And so something like this happens. We have many times experienced a kind of happiness when we've gotten something we wanted, and many times experienced a relief when we've gotten rid of something that we don't want. And because that is where we think we'll find happiness, we actually then start looking for something pleasant to have or something unpleasant to get rid of. And so the cycle is that the wanting and the not wanting begin to drive our decisions and our choices. So, you know, for instance, you know, we may get something that we like, a pleasant meal or something, and because of the nature of pleasant experience, all experience for that matter, it fades. The nature of pleasant experience is that it is impermanent. The nature of unpleasant experience is that it is impermanent. All experience is impermanent. And so we, you know, having had that hit of pleasure from the pleasantness, when that pleasure fades, we are left with the kind of mind that's like, okay, well, the last time I felt really good was when I got something I wanted. So what can I want to want? We'll start looking for something to want. Or my mind, what I discovered my mind did, wasn't so much looking for pleasant things. It was like, oh, looking for something unpleasant to get rid of. That was my mode of being. It's like I would look around. It's like, oh, there's that unpleasant thing. Oh, maybe if I get rid of that, I'll be okay. Okay, whew, that's gone. Oh, but let's see, is there anything else unpleasant to get rid of? Basically, the mind scanning, looking for something unpleasant to get rid of, essentially orienting towards the unpleasant in order to get rid of it. And so the Buddha in his own mind, in his own practice, saw this pattern and was curious about it, began exploring, investigating it, and recognized that it is not hardwired. It is, in fact, there is choice about whether we take action to automatically, we don't have to automatically follow through when there's something pleasant or automatically follow through when there's something unpleasant. We can explore what does it mean to watch the impermanent nature of pleasant, the impermanent nature of unpleasant, the impermanent nature of neutral experience. And also he began to recognize that there are available through the process of meditation, the process of being curious about our own minds, just a simple like, well, let's see what's going on in this body in the present moment. Oh, there's breath. Breath coming and going. Body sensations coming and going. This creates a kind of a container of awareness of mindfulness around the present moment and stabilizes that container so that we are more, there's a kind of a continuity of the mindfulness either on some one experience such as the breath or even a stability of awareness, just receiving the flow of human life. And as we are in that container of continuity, we see there's not so much room for the reactivity because the mind notices a sound, for instance. Our habitual response to a sound might be to think about the sound, maybe react to the sound. But if we are right in the present moment, we see, we hear, we experience that, and then the next moment there's something else, and something else, and something else. And so there's very little room for this kind of leaping from pleasant or unpleasant to happen. And that experience of that continuity of mindfulness over time is experienced as very, very pleasant. It is a kind of, the Buddha pointed to it as a deeper kind of happiness that's available. Not through getting pleasant and unpleasant, but through observing, witnessing this kind of flow of experience, or being with one experience, just watching the breath. And then understanding how our minds react, understanding that unpleasant sensation doesn't have to move to reactivity. As we watch this happen in our own minds in this retreat that I just taught, over and over again, I saw the delight and joy on people's faces as they saw, oh, I can just watch this and watch a transformation happen. And there's a release and a delight and a joy that comes from not fighting and resisting and trying to control or manipulate reality, our world, but just receiving. This, the Buddha pointed to as a kind of happiness that comes with understanding. And so he pointed to deeper kinds of happiness that are available. And that this place of exploring a feeling tone, you know, the pleasant, the unpleasant, the neutral aspect of experience, is a key place for us to begin to see how this springing or leaping from pleasant to liking, wanting, from unpleasant, not liking, not wanting, aversion, to watch that process at work. Essentially what starts to happen there, and so the way the mindfulness works in some ways, I think our being, our system, our organism wants to move in the direction of well-being. That is how our organism is built. It naturally wants to move in the direction of well-being, much as that tree naturally wants to move in the direction of receiving nourishment so that it will grow. And it's not a wanting in the way that, you know, it's not a conscious wanting, it's just the natural consequences of a tree growing, that it will gravitate towards nourishment that creates the strongest, most healthy tree in these conditions. And so our minds essentially gravitate towards well-being, but the way our own minds work with the concepts, the ideas that our humanness allows us to navigate the world, there's a lot of room for misunderstanding. And this misunderstanding around the best kind of happiness comes from getting what I want or getting rid of what I don't want, it's a fundamental misunderstanding, because we haven't learned about some of these deeper kinds of happiness, deeper kinds of well-being that are available to us. Most of us don't hear this kind of understanding in our lives, especially in our early lives. And so this misunderstanding about where happiness comes kind of gets in the way. And so our minds will gravitate towards the best kind of happiness which we know of, which for many of us, as before we begin our practice, is this lesser kind of happiness. And so as we start to explore and get curious about, oh, pleasant experience, unpleasant experience, and seeing how the mind will habitually move, oh, pleasant, wanting, leaning, liking, holding on to, we begin to experience that movement from pleasant through liking, wanting, holding on. We begin to realize that the wanting, the holding on, actually creates a kind of contraction in our system. And our system understands this as not conducive to well-being in the moment. But because we are kind of in the world of our concepts and ideas, the movement from, oh, there's something pleasant. I want it. I want to move towards it, is kind of involved with a whole set of thoughts in our mind about getting that thing, an idea about how great it's going to be when I get that thing. And so essentially our mind is kind of enchanted by the concept or the idea of the having, which is just an idea in our minds. We don't have it yet. And so it's nothing real. It's a construct of our minds, this idea of, oh, isn't it going to be great? So it's like we create a world that in our minds is very pleasant. But this pleasantness is purely mind-constructed. And yet, because that power of concept, idea, and just like being enchanted by our concepts and ideas is so powerful, that kind of pleasant idea obscures the actual present moment experience of contraction and non-well-being that comes both with the wanting and the whole constructing of that enchantment. And so we miss, in our normal way of being, we miss that this process is right here and now leading to non-well-being. And so with mindfulness, we begin to see just what is happening in the present moment. And we recognize, oh, wanting hurts, actually. This kind of leaning towards this idea and holding on. Ooh, there's tension there. Same with aversion. Oh, that hurts. And so our system, again, a lot of this is the way our natural being works. When our system, our organism, gets the information that wanting and aversion are not conducive to well-being in the moment, our system begins to kind of reorient and begin to understand the possibility of a new way to happiness, the letting go, towards the letting go, release. My own practice, I have seen this, this process at work, and noticing, you know, essentially the mind wanting something, something it thinks is going to be pleasant. And observing the wanting, observing the unpleasantness of that wanting, seeing the mind kind of enchanted by the idea of the pleasant and the belief that getting that thing is going to be happiness. So seeing all of that and being willing to just kind of hang out with the stickiness, the pull of the wanting without acting on it, but just curiosity. I did this on one retreat where I was watching people, or not watching, but seeing my mind want to watch people. And just curious about that pull towards somebody appears in my field of vision and just like this magnetic pull, it's like wanting to see this person. And somehow thinking that is going to be happiness. And yet as soon as that person kind of went around a corner, it's like the wanting vanished. And in seeing that wanting vanish in that moment, seeing that happen, that experience, it was like being released from a vice grip. The happiness of that release was a different kind of happiness, actually. That was an education for this system, that there is a different and deeper kind of happiness available, that kind of release from the wanting. The being, this being, this organism understood it as a deeper kind of well-being than getting a brief hit of looking at somebody and knowing who they were. The release from the wanting, a deeper kind of happiness. And so a way that we can begin exploring this whole process, because this whole process, the springboard of the whole process, is this feeling tone. And so we can begin to be curious about feeling tone. What is the experience of feeling tone? Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral here. Feeling tone is a translation of the Pali word vedana, which is often translated as feeling or feeling tone, but it's not emotion. It's just this really simple aspect of experience, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And it's within every single sense experience, this is happening. There's a lot of neutral feeling happening. A lot of that we don't recognize much at all. And yet the pleasant and unpleasant can be pretty clear for us if we get interested in it. We have habitually been more interested in the wanting and the ideas about the having of pleasant than we have been in the pleasant or unpleasant itself. And so partly just hearing, it's useful to begin noticing this aspect of experience helps us to start to see it. So it's associated with every sense experience, with every aspect of our experience, both physical experience, touch experience, all of our senses, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, as well as things that go on in our minds. In the Buddhist psychology, the mind is understood to be a sixth sense base, that as much as our eye receives sight, our ear receives sound, our mind receives mind experiences like thoughts or emotions or mind states. And so every experience, every sound, every sight, every touch, every taste, every thought, every emotion has a flavor of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So, for instance, the feeling tone associated with touch sense. So right now I'm feeling coolness there of my hand. That feels relatively neutral, although in my hand itself, there's a part of my hand in my thumb that feels very cold, and that's slightly unpleasant. And so sensations in the body, itches or burning or tingling or pulsing, these may have qualities of pleasant or unpleasant. Emotions, anger, frustration tend to be experienced as unpleasant. Happiness, delight, calm may be experienced as pleasant. And so, getting familiar with feeling tone, I think the easiest place to begin to get familiar with this aspect of experience is in the touch sense. Our touch sense, our skin, is extremely sensitive to this pleasant, unpleasant, neutral aspect of experience. And so just for a couple minutes, let's explore that. And just, however you're sitting, just you can close your eyes and just touch in to your sensations. And just see what's most obvious in your experience right now. What physical sensation is most obvious? Is it, the contact, not sight or sound, but the physical touch sense? Maybe the contact of your hips against the chair or cushion or bench, or touch points of hands, or maybe some particular area of discomfort or a particular area of comfortableness. What is the most obvious experience for you in this moment, physical experience? And is that experience pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? And noticing that quality, does it get stronger, weaker, or stay the same? Just touching into that. And then if it fades or kind of vanishes, Is there another, what's the next most obvious sensation? And how is that experience just pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? And now I'm going to name some parts of the body and just check into those areas and see what is this, the feeling in that area. You'll notice some sensations, but can you check into pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? So the contact of your hips against the chair or cushion or bench. Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Maybe some parts pleasant, some parts unpleasant. The sensations of your knees. Pleasant, unpleasant. How about your hands? And now for about a minute, I'm going to suggest you just kind of let the attention randomly float through the body. And just notice, you know, where the attention might land. Just allow it to float and land on some sensation every second or so. And then just check in, and is it pleasant or unpleasant or neutral? And now, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And another one. And just let it float for a few seconds in that way. And now I'm going to point to some of the way in which our mental experiences can be pleasant or unpleasant, how they can call up pleasant or unpleasant experience. So I'm going to create some images, ask you to create some images in your mind and see what is the feeling tone with those. So imagine yourself in the place you spend the most time each day. Just an image of that place. And is there an experience of pleasant or unpleasant? Imagine the sound of nails on a blackboard. Probably unpleasant. Imagine yourself relaxing in the sun on a day when it's the perfect temperature. And imagine yourself looking into a deep blue sky, cloudless sky. And so what, just curious, just call out a few things, I'll repeat them. What did you notice in that? Were you able to notice the quality, the feeling tone in these various experiences? Was it available for you to notice that? A few nods. How about the thoughts? Or did those create that feeling tone? I think this part is kind of interesting because we see actually, you know, our thoughts are kind of running all day long. And they have this kind of pleasant, unpleasant kind of quality going. And we are not noticing often that aspect of the experience. Did you feel any kind of tensing when something was unpleasant? Was that something you noticed? Something unpleasant was touched into? Kind of a... Or a kind of a relaxing when something was pleasant? Something. So as we begin to get familiar with, one other piece. I'm just curious. I at one point suggested that you kind of just let your mind kind of freely roam and then land on something. Is it pleasant, unpleasant, neutral? Did any of you notice that? I mean, so first of all, how many of you found that when that happened, there was kind of a predominant either pleasant or unpleasantness to that? So, yeah, I definitely find that. You know, that it was kind of almost as if our minds were attuned more to one direction than another. For how many of you was that pleasant? How many unpleasant? How many neutral? Okay, so this is an interesting piece because, and the first time somebody did this for me, it was kind of shocking because I knew that the experience was not composed entirely of unpleasant experience. But that every time my mind landed on what I thought was just some random experience, it was unpleasant. And I after that guided meditation, I said to my teacher, well, this was not random. It clearly wasn't random because I know that it's not all unpleasantness. But that's every experience was unpleasant. And so this basically betrays a habit of mind to gravitate towards one of these three fields. Some people grow up gravitating towards pleasant, moving towards that kind of, get what I want kind of mode. Now, some people grow up gravitating towards unpleasant, like, if I can fix things, control things, change things, get rid of the unpleasant, that's how I'll be happy. People with the neutral, it may be that there's it can be a couple things. It can either be kind of more like, well, how do I fit in here? What's going on? Just kind of a more general kind of scanning of what's available in the environment. And so perhaps more neutral there. And so it's useful to both get to know what your mind kind of habitually, what pattern your mind habitually gravitates towards, and then get familiar with the habitual ways you respond to that. And so sometimes with pleasant, it's the leaning in, the wanting. With unpleasant, the wanting to push away. With unpleasant, I know so much more about the unpleasant side of things because that's where my mind has been habituated, and so I see in my own experience at times with the unpleasant, the mind recoiling, almost in a fear reaction, or at times kind of pushing away in a more aversive reaction or an anger reaction, and so that sometimes different responses to that, but predominantly my mind goes towards the aversion, the anger, that is where the mind habituated. And so recognizing, not judging this is conditioned. This is how we have, this is how we've grown up, essentially, with this kind of orientation. The habit of responding in a certain way has been conditioned. And yet, it is not hardwired. And so we can begin to be curious about that movement from pleasant to liking. And notice the wanting. Notice that feeling of a kind of contraction around the wanting. Noticing the not liking. Noticing the aversion. Noticing the kind of contractedness around aversion. And checking in. I mean, essentially one really useful practice around reactivity, actually. When there's reactivity going on in the mind, there is something that the mind is responding to in this field of pleasant, unpleasant. And what actually is it that is being reacted to? Because it is often not what we think it is. So one example from my own practice. One night I was meditating kind of late. I was having some trouble sleeping, so I got up and I meditated in my house. And as I was sitting there, I sat there for some period of time, I heard this little scratching noise. It was pretty quiet little scratching noise, you know, just this like. And the experience was kind of, you know, my mind interpreted that sound as unpleasant. And so I noticed that. I noticed that the mind thought the sound was unpleasant, and I just continued. And I think the sound came and went. It came and went for quite a long time, actually, because I got quite a bit of time to watch this. So it would happen for a little while, a couple times, experience the unpleasantness, and then it would stop. And then it would come back. And when it came back, I got to see a little bit more. I got to see a little bit of contraction in the body that happened when that sound happened. And that contraction was unpleasant. And a little while later, I got to see that when that sound happened, there was fear in the mind. I hadn't noticed the fear before. It was a subtle just shift of kind of, it was just a subtle sense of, what's that? You know, I think my mind created an image of a rat in the wall or something like that, you know. So there was fear there. And in seeing the fear was unpleasant. The fear was so clearly unpleasant. The contraction in the body was clearly unpleasant. And having seen that, the next time the sound arose, I recognized the sound itself is not unpleasant. It's pretty neutral. But the idea there's a rat in the wall and the fear that creates, that is unpleasant. That is where the reaction was coming from. And kind of an attribution, essentially an attribution initially, that the sound itself was unpleasant. This happens a lot in our experience. We attribute pleasant, unpleasant to experience in the world. But it's actually our ideas about that thing in the world that create the feeling of pleasant or unpleasant. Way more than we imagine. In one teaching in the Buddhist commentaries about this topic of feeling tone, it says that the touch sense, you know, the skin, the physical touch sense of the body, the inner touch sense, you know, the sensations inside the body, you know, like that can be pleasant and unpleasant. But that the basic experience of hearing, seeing, smelling, and tasting is inherently neutral. The contact of sight waves against the eye, sound waves against the ear, that contact is neutral, and that any sense of pleasant or unpleasant at the eye or ear or nose or tongue is constructed through our ideas, our beliefs, our concepts. And that it is actually the idea that is pleasant or unpleasant. Now, I don't know if I believe this entirely, but it's a really interesting exploration. I mean, I've got this idea. I know this is an idea, but I do have this idea that, you know, our bodies are designed to protect us, for instance, from getting noxious stuff. And so, you know, put a piece of cow dung in your mouth, it's going to be unpleasant. And, you know, maybe that's not just constructed by the mind. Maybe not. I don't know. But in any case, I'm curious about this teaching, and it's provided an interesting exploration for me to watch just how much fluctuation there can be in feeling tone. Something that I think is kind of inherent in the sight or taste or smell. When there are different conditions, the feeling tone fluctuates. So around taste, for instance, noticing that particularly the pleasantness of an apple that I experienced at one point, that pleasantness increased after I had some kind of savory experience on the tongue, some bean dip. I had a bite of bean dip. And then the next bite of apple was even more pleasant. And over time, noticing that if I had multiple bites of apple, that the experience of pleasant diminished with each bite. And it still was pleasant, but it wasn't as pleasant. That first bite of that apple, this was in New England in October, it was a freshly picked apple. It was like the best apple I had ever eaten. I was meditating in the middle of a 3-month retreat, though, so that probably supported the delight in that moment. And so those were conditions, too, that led to that delight. But so that first bite was so delightful. And yet, more bites, the pleasantness was still there, but just not quite as intense. And so noticing the changing experience of feeling. And sight is a very interesting place to explore this. I think, you know, actually, in sight, I'm more willing to kind of recognize that what we take to be pleasant and unpleasant in sight is based on an idea and habits, relationships, conditions associated with sights. Because, you know, what I've seen at times through the meditation practice that there are times when the eye is just receiving like pixels of color, like the bare kind of experience of seeing is kind of a mass of color and form and shape, but not, there's like no sense to the objects. It's just like seeing a kind of one of those images that when you look at them kind of cross-eyed, something pops out, but before you look at them cross-eyed, it just looks like blips, kind of like that. And then all the objects kind of popped in, and it's like all the experience is like, oh, that's a wall, that's a person, that's a flower, that's a dead leaf. And then, you know, so that a bare kind of just color and form was neutral. And the mind then associating pleasant with the flower, unpleasant with the dead leaf. The idea being a place where the reactivity comes from. And so when you are experiencing some kind of reactivity, anger or aversion or frustration or confusion or pride or agitation, a question that can be useful is what? I mean, we may think we know what we're reacting to. I don't like that thing happening or that sound, that motorcycle going by, you know, while we're meditating. That sound may be experienced as unpleasant. And yet, what actually is unpleasant there? The sound kind of comes and goes. And often what's unpleasant there is the idea, this is disturbing my meditation. And so curiosity about what actually is the unpleasantness that we are reacting to, this is a very powerful, very powerful exploration. I think actually that beliefs, views, concepts, ideas are a huge field through which our feeling tone is created. This is kind of an amazing thing to recognize, that feeling tone is understood in this psychology not to be something inherent out there in the world, but constructed by our own minds. Our bodies and our minds construct this experience of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And that construct of feeling is hugely variable depending on the beliefs, the ideas, the concepts that are at play in our minds. I like this. I don't like this. This should be here. This shouldn't be here. Those ideas influence how we see things. If we are in the midst of an aversion attack, when we look out at the world, we are seeing things through a filter of that aversion, and probably, or very likely, what your mind will orient to is what your mind finds unpleasant. It will look for the unpleasant. It will experience things as unpleasant. During walking meditation at one point, I was noticing this aversion attack that I had. I was doing walking meditation and just feeling aversion, knowing the aversion, knowing the aversion. I turned around at the end of my walking path and saw somebody else's shoes at the end of my walking path, and my mind exploded with more aversion to what I took to be the unpleasantness of seeing those shoes at the end of my walking path. The shoes were not actually unpleasant. The mind was oriented towards unpleasant. And the idea that somebody else's shoes were in my space, a whole host of concepts and ideas at play in the creation of that unpleasant experience. And so it's extremely useful to be curious about feeling tone and the whole way it is constructed. The understanding in Buddhist psychology is that feeling tone is a construct of our minds. It's kind of mind-blowing to take in. And yet, again, you know, the Buddha encouraged us to check it out for ourselves. You don't have to believe this, but be curious about feeling tone. And in the process of being curious about feeling tone, you will learn so much about your minds. And so much about how reactivity happens, that the system, the organism, will get a whole different set of information about where well-being lies. And tree roots grow towards the nourishment in the soil. Our system inclines towards the nourishment of that deeper well-being. And now it's time to stop. I apologize. No time for discussion. So thank you for your attention.